Hello, friends, and welcome back to the second hour of Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting live from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place, and I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to tell everyone we have a spiritual mentoring. I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides, and if you'd like to get in touch with your spirit guides and angels, please call me at 509-750-9793 here in the United States, or you can email me as well at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Tomorrow, in addition to the other events I listed earlier, I'll be at a place called Shipwreck Beads at 8560 Commerce Place in Lacey, Washington. I'll be there all day tomorrow on Saturday, August 25th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. giving readings, and also have copies of my new book, Messages from the Masters. I wanted to tell everyone as well that my next Galactic Wisdom Conference will be held in Olympia, Washington at 9101 Stillicum Road Southeast from April 12th to the 16th, 2019. There's a substantial discount of only $55 for the entire conference if you register early. For details, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com or you can call me at 509-750-9793. In addition, next month, from September 6th to the 12th, I'll be taking a group of people to Mount Shasta, Telos, and the Hollow Earth. I've been sponsoring trips to Mount Shasta and the Hollow Earth for the last 2 years, and I guarantee it's an amazing out-of-this-world place. We always see Sasquatch, lots of UFOs, and as well as meet the people of Telos. And if you're interested, there's still some spots available. Please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. We're having on the trip, it's going to be a small group, but we're having people coming in from Germany, England, Ireland, Mexico City, across Canada, and I know we'll have a wonderful time there. So please contact me if you'd like to go. With that, I'd like to go to London, England, where I have Alison Bourne on. She does wonderful healing work with her special work, and I want to bring her now in. Eric, were you able to get a hold of her? Great, Alison, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
It's so good to have you
on. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. Is it late there in England?
Yes, it's just gone 11 o'clock at night.
Okay. Well, I had a friend on during the first hour from Japan, and I promised her I'd buy her a cup of coffee to because I woke her up so early. And now, because we're in Seattle and you're in London, it's also late there, so I'll buy you a cup of coffee when we get together sometime as a way of saying thanks.
I actually live on the South Coast. I was born in London.
Okay.
But I live in the New Forest.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Alison. Well, tell us the kind of work you do. I know you do wonderful healing work. And if you could give your website too, that'd be great.
Oh, thank you. I started out as a healer with the National Federation of Spiritual Healers in my early 20s, and since 97 I've developed a system which is actually becoming a new psychological therapy intervention, and it's called color breathing. And the website is www.colorbreathing.com, and it's based on a set of 7 colored discs which I call color breathing discs. And that they're related to the energy centers, the chakras. And we have developed a system, and we were actually accepted by the BCMA in 2004. That's the British Complementary Medicine Association. Mm-hmm. But we're just in the process of finalizing what's called CPD accreditation for our 2-day training program, and I think in the States you call that continuing education,
that's credentials. Right. That's right, yes.
And yesterday, I'm sure Dr. Cheng won't mind, I had a really exciting meeting at a hospital in Portsmouth. We're looking to do some research studies with ovarian cancer patients. Because my background also includes having worked in palliative care in a hospice setting for 7 years. So it's about self-empowerment, the colour breathing system. We have a book kit, and we have a set of 70 affirmation cards. We have our own system of practitioners being trained to be able to deliver relaxation support sessions. And we're going to be launching in the States. I think that's how we sort of formed our connection, wasn't it, Ted? We got talking about it.
That's
and,
right.
I'd love to hear from any of your listeners who are interested in meditation, healing, helping people with anxiety and depression, school teachers. You know, we're just really keen to connect with US individuals who would like to make a difference and become the first sort of US color breathing practitioners.
Why don't you? I have a conference every year called the Galactic Wisdom Conference. Next year, it's going to be my fifth annual conference. It'll be April 12th, 13th, and 14th, 2019. And then on the 15th and 16th of April, I'll be bringing in some famous healers from Tokyo, Japan with the Emoto office. But why don't you, if you'd like, why don't you come to my conference? I'd love to have you there, especially if you're a healer.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Okay.
That would be lovely, Ted. Really
okay.
Great.
Okay, well, just plan... Just plan on it. We'll work out the details later. I'd love to have you come.
Thank you. Because in the early stages of color breathing, we initially thought it was a book, you know, a relaxation kit. And I did do some conferences in Denver. I came out to Colorado. I did one there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done a couple in Sydney, in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So I love meeting people and being with people. So that would be really lovely. So thank you.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Allison. And for those here in America listening today, color breathing, I believe it's spelled, it's colourbreathing.com. Is that right? Because in the States here,
yes.
we spell color COLOR, but it,
yes.
I just want to make sure that people have the right address.
Thank you. As I said, we're in the process. I've got a big meeting tomorrow. We're raising some major investment, so we become an evidence-based intervention. I mean, our goal is to enable colour breathing. We also call it CBRT, because here in the UK, our healthcare system, the NHS, they like to have everything as an acronym. So CBRT is colour breathing relaxation technique.
Okay.
And we're planning to work with the veterans and the school systems in Arizona initially. I've got some wonderful people out there ready to help us move the program forward. So we are planning on having a major US launch. And there's nothing I'd love more than to get the ball spinning and rolling at your conference, Bill. That would be lovely.
Great. Well, could just plan on coming. We'll work out the details. And Allison, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. And your website, again, is www.colourbreathing.com. And color is spelled COLOUR breathing.com. And Allison, thank you so much for coming on today. And again, my apologies for keeping you up so late there. I know it's late there in England.
That's fine. And if anyone wants to email me, just go to info at colourbreathing.com.
Okay.
And that will come through to us.
Okay. All
Thank
right.
Thank you.
All right,
Allison. Bye to everyone. Thank you.
Thank you so much for
Bye.
Coming on, Allison. Have a good sleep.
Thank you.
Good night.
And you.
Take
Bye.
Care. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. That was Allison Bourne coming to us live from England on her wonderful new alternative healing therapy, colourbreathing.com. And with that, I'd like to bring on my good friend David Adair coming to us now from West Virginia. And fortunately, it's not in the middle of the night in West Virginia, and David's awake. So we'll get him now. We need to get to, we'll work on getting him back. I wanted to tell you briefly, too, if you missed the first hour, I'm having several different out-of-this-world galactic wisdom psychic fairs coming up. The first one will be on September 29th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. It'll be at 9101 Stillicum Road, Southeast in Olympia. The event's free, and if you'd like to be a vendor at the event, it's only $50 for a table. The second one will be on November 10th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., And it'll be a psychic fair plus a Hado fair with Michiko Hayashi, who will be flying in from Tokyo, Japan, and who will be giving a presentation as well as demonstrating her specialized Hado sessions. And after that, there's going to be another one on March 9th, 2019, at the same location. But with that, my wonderful producer Eric has just given me thumbs up, and he said that David's back with us again. David, hi. Welcome back to the Out of This World.
Yeah, thanks. Glad to be here.
We were talking during the break a few minutes about virals and chemtrails, and that upper respiratory problems are actually the fastest growing health problem here in the United States. And you're talking about rubbing your hands on cars in Los Angeles. Could you continue with that, please?
Sure. You find any old car sitting around look like it hadn't been driven in years. Mm-hmm. If you walk over and run your hand over it, over the hood or the roof, your hand will be covered in a white powder. And that's aluminum oxide coming out of the chemtrails. I've listened to so many conspiracy theories of what chemtrails are made of, and people, I mean, it's just, some of the stuff's just ridiculous. What it actually is, it was a plan that was set in motion by Edward Teller. If you know that name, he is the he's the inventor of the H-bomb.
Sure.
Anyway, he designed the spray nozzles for the jets that are spraying the chemtrails.
Really?
When it first started out, there were 700 707 Air Force tankers flying through the skies 24/7 across the whole planet. And they're spraying this compound into the sky. And it's mostly aluminum oxide. And it's very shiny, very reflective, very bright. And it is to... after the chemtrail comes out, it looks like a long contrail that doesn't dissipate. Some of them even have tassels hanging down on it. And that will all spread out after about a half hour into a thin, wispy cloud, which looks like cirrus clouds at about 80,000 feet. Mm-hmm. And what you have is you have a thin layer of this stuff all across the upper atmospheres, across the whole planet.
Wow.
And what it's designed to do is to reflect sunlight back into space. That's it. That's all it is.
Wow.
It's reflecting sunlight back into space, and it's designed to be an artificial sunscreen for the planet. Because the ozone layer has been damaged so badly, they can't get... it's the temperature, the overall temperature of the planet they're trying to keep from rising up. Here's the question... Who or what caused the chemtrails? Why are they here? And then that's when all the conspiracy theories start. And it's really, I've researched this thing, and it's really a lot more simple than you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
What the problem is of all things, temperatures in the oceans. They have been getting to about 90, 95 degrees in the Gulf of Mexico. The Atlantic's showing an increase. Pacific is definitely showing an increase in temperatures. So what's that got to do with anything? A lot. Because the temperature of the water is fuel for hurricanes.
Oh, okay.
And if you're raising the temperature of the oceans, you're raising the number on the Scheinman scale of categories of hurricanes. If you don't put those chemtrails out and run them like they do, you'll be staring at, right now, the highest we've seen is Category 5. But if you don't have that sunscreen doing its thing, you're going to look at Category 6, 7, 8, maybe 9 categories. And that's when the insurance companies came and told the government, if you don't stop the rise of these hurricane categories and find a way to cool things down, we're simply going to bankrupt. Because Katrina came in and did almost $2 billion damage. And the insurance company said, we couldn't take a Katrina every year. They said, we'll go under. And if we go under, we're going to take you with us, the entire country. Mm-hmm. And don't think that's an idle threat. The insurance is actually they're tied in with so many financial legs.
Mm-hmm.
They're like a spider, and they're hooked into our economy. And if they go under and tank out, they can bring the entire economy down.
There's three things I'd love to interject and then get your comment on this, David. My program, is called Out of This World Radio. And I'm a psychic. I come from a psychic family, and I've been in touch. It's normal for me to talk to spirits on the other side, as well as the Galactic Alliance, which are benevolent extraterrestrials beyond this planet. And the Galactics have told me that part of the reason why, I mean, that all sounds well and good to spray aluminum, but on the other hand, they say that the reason why, one of the reasons why that the government, our government, is spraying all this aluminum in our atmosphere, is to, as well as other chemicals, is to terraform the planet to make it less friendly to humans and more friendly to another species that the U.S. government's been involved with, called the reptilians, in a kind of a military alliance since 1954. The other problem with that is that many light workers tell me that one of the reasons, and I'd love your comment on this too, David, the reasons why they spray aluminum is it does deflect the sunlight out into outer space, so the planet doesn't warm up as much. But the problem is that the sunlight coming to the planet now is actually helping to raise the vibrations of the planet, something called the Schumann resonance, which was at 7.8 hertz for tens of thousands of years. And then in 2016, it started doubling. And now it's something right around 230 hertz. And it's literally raising the vibrations of this planet. And the vibrations are rising as a result. One of the reasons they're rising is because of the sunlight that's coming in. A lot of my light worker friends don't trust this chemical spraying. They don't trust the government's motives for aluminum spraying. I mean, it all sounds well and good to deflect the sunlight, but then I hear these stories about that they're actually doing it to terraform the planet to make it more friendly to another species and less friendly to humans. And then also, too, you talk about respiratory illnesses and also the incidence of Alzheimer's, which I think has been going up as a result of the aluminum spraying. So there's a lot of people are starting to ask a lot of questions, and we never voted on it. You know, it's all done in secret. You see the planes up there, but nobody talks about it. Mass media doesn't discuss it. It's there, though.
It's there, and you're right. It's been going on for years, and even if it's just as, as innocuous as just reflecting sunlight back into space, trying to keep the planet a little cooler so the hurricanes don't beat the insurance company to death.
Right.
The problem with all that, if all that's true, that's fine, but it's not fine because here's the biggest problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
There's never been any long-term studies done addressing the fact that you're dumping so much aluminum oxide into the atmosphere.
Right.
What's the long-term health effects? Well, obviously something's going on in the upper respiratory world because it's one of the worst growing problems in not just this country, but every country on the planet.
Right.
So no one's done any studies. You're right. No one will officially talk about the trails. The media will not turn the cameras and point them straight up when you can see a waffle over your head.
Right.
Or it's like playing a big tic-tac-toe game.
Right.
Those are not normal contrails, and you cannot get the media to say that it's something other than contrails. And it's a big problem. It should be a national security concern. And terraforming for another race, well, I can't comment on that because I haven't met anybody.
Sure.
Another world that could be doing that. But right. If they are doing that,
mm-hmm.
What humans would be involved in that? There's actually no known, antidote for whatever it is. They're breathing air unless they're wearing a respirator or they're are privy to a medical system that we don't have any knowledge of, like a Star Trek thing. And because they're going to be killing themselves, they're living here. Right. They got to breathe the atmosphere. They're going to die.
Right.
So something's got to be going on with that. But it is a fact that they're there. They are real. We're breathing the crap, and there's no long-term studies for it. That right there is enough to shut it down.
I have to tell you this. My galactic friends tell me, of course, the reptilians, their home planet's called Draco. And their average Fahrenheit temperature is 140 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the reason why some people say that the U.S. government, darker elements of the government's been spraying lots of sulfur into our atmosphere to actually heat up the atmosphere because that's what the reptilians like. I mean, if you've ever been down to Arizona or New Mexico or a desert here in the United States, and you see the reptiles, actually, the snakes, they get active when it's really hot. The other thing, too, I've been told by my galactic friends, is that the home atmosphere of Draco, the home planet of the reptilians, is actually made up of aluminum oxide, barium, and strontium, among other things. And those are the same ingredients that's being sprayed in our chemtrail program. I used to live in a town called Moses Lake, Washington, in eastern Washington. And you would see U.S. Navy planes coming within 50, 60 yards, David, of the ground. And they were spraying aluminum, barium, and strontium. And the reason I know that is because I had scientific tests done by the University of Wisconsin Laboratories, testing the air, the water, and the fish in this local lake. And the air itself contained 8,000 to 10,000 times what it should have been, which is virtually nothing, in aluminum. And actually, they said that if this was a work site, it would be closed down by the Department of Labor because it was toxic. So anyway, I had to finally move in 2014 away from there to the Seattle area, where there is some chemtrails here, but not the same as eastern Washington. It's pretty bad there. But you've given us I had no idea that Edward Teller invented chemtrails. When did he do that? How long ago did he do that, David?
About 15 years ago.
Okay.
You can just go to the internet and go through the patent search, and you'll find a patent that his name is on that is a spray nozzle that's built on the trailing edge of wing of an aircraft to spray chemical compounds. And when he did that, that's when we started seeing the chemtrails show up in that sky. So Edward Teller is your main person. He's not the guy that probably brought it up as far as what to do. He just came up with a solution of how to get the stuff out into the atmosphere.
Wow.
So I don't know whether there's so many unknowns, but I do know that it's not imaginary. It's a real situation. Very much like, you know, you have your, my God, what, see, my brain is going.
Oh, that's okay. That's all right.
Now your structures out in the crop circles.
Oh, right.
Those are real, and that's not a Doug and Dave show going on. Mm-hmm. And yet, you can't get any of the mainstream scientific community to move on it, to look at it on a serious level, trying to figure out what it is.
Right.
And so the chemtrails, same thing. You're seeing them right in front of you,
right,
and no one's taking it seriously in the scientific community.
But I
agree with you. It could be a terraforming plan.
Sure.
But I'll tell you this. If you go into Hollywood with a science fiction movie and you say, I'm going to make this science fiction movie like Charlie Sheen was in when they had a movie he was in called Arrivals, and they were terraforming the atmosphere.
Right.
But you go in and tell these Hollywood producers, there's going to be these aliens coming in. They're reptiles. They got to get the atmosphere up to where they're warm, cold-blooded bodies could live with it, and they're going to take over the world, and they're going to do it by spraying chemtrails in the sky.
Right.
And that's how we reflect light out, and we'll start it that way.
Right.
And the one other kick to it, everybody will look up and see all these tic-tac-toe boards in the sky.
Right.
And no one will say a word about it or ever question it.
Right.
You'd get thrown out of the room. The producers would tell you, that's the stupidest story we ever heard. What do you mean? You spray that much in the sky and nobody's going to pay attention? But that's exactly what's happening.
You know, I did talk to Chris Carter about that on X-Files about a year ago. He was on my show. And he liked the idea. I haven't seen anything come out, but I need to get a hold of him. Again, that would be kind of interesting to talk about that. The other thing I wanted to tell you, too, and this comes from... if you are in an area that's heavily sprayed with chemtrails, you can get those heavy metals out of your system by using, I've heard anyway, by using what's called DE, which is diatomaceous earth, which is from the White Cliffs of Dover in southeastern England. The heavy metals like aluminum will attach to that, to these little DE particles, and then you just flush it out of your system. I know I ended up with a problem with that. A lot of heavy metals in my system. Every once, and as a result of that, I get severe cramping because my body is full of was full of all these heavy metals from the illegal spraying by chemtrails by the United States Navy over there. And so I've been taking DE for years, and it's slowly flushing all this stuff out of my system. So anyway, I feel sorry for the people over there. Local media ignores it. Everybody sees the planes, but it's pretty bad too. So
it is. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on right in front of us, and I don't know if it's a sheeple mentality, but
yeah,
people look up and they'll see the chemtrails, and nothing registers in their head.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with that.
yeah. Well, the thing I like about you, David, is that you've got a brilliant mind, and my goodness, you started out at age 6 and 7 reading all these scientific texts that most adults couldn't read. But it's like,
that's true.
It's reading down. I have to ask you this. I hope this is an off subject, David, but there's been, of course, a lot of fires in California. We have fires in Washington here in the Seattle area. The air is just terrible today. It's I believe the particulate matter a couple days ago was something like 168 particles per. I'm not sure how they do that per square foot in the air, but it's gotten to the point a couple days ago where they warned people to don't go outside, don't breathe the air, which is kind of silly, or wear a mask. It's pretty hazy out there today, and I believe it's from the forest fires. But the rumor that I've heard from people in Northern California is that many of these fires are not natural, and they've actually started by particle beam weapons. Oh, we have a call? Okay, just a moment here. And the thing that I've noticed is that in the pictures that you see from these fires, David, I don't know if you've seen these photographs or not, but you'll have a housing development in a rural area around Redding. It's one fire is called the Carr Fire, C-A-R-R fire. And all the homes will be destroyed, burned to a crisp, but yet the trees and the grasses and the shrubbery and the gardens are untouched. Cars would be melted, the bumpers melted on the street, but yet everything else is fine. Have you heard about that yourself, David? Just curious.
No, that's new to me, but I guess something similar to that.
Uh-huh.
I was, if you didn't know this, I was in the Navy for 11 years.
Uh-huh.
And that was a result of my story. That's how my story ended. At Groom Lake, I ended up spending a decade with the Navy. I got kidnapped right out of high school.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, I was with the Navy, and it wasn't long. When they came and got me, it wasn't like I was drafted or anything, although that's what they used to grab me with. The draft didn't shut down until 1975, and they came and got me.
Sure.
In June 72, they took me. But anyway, while I was in there, they found out I had particular skills that they thought they could use, or if I'd agree to work with them.
Sure.
Well, we struck a series of compromises, and I ended up in some very secured areas and secure information. And one of the things I had to do, I had to do a trip through the Negev Desert, which is the desert between Israel and Eilat, which is like the Red Sea. Eilat, that city, is like, it's kind of like the French Riviera of the Mideast.
Oh, by the way, David, I don't mean to interrupt, my friend, but we are getting some phone calls in. After you finish your story, would you be interested in taking a question?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, we'll go, and Alexa from Seattle and others waiting, just please hold on. We'll be happy to get your question. Just give us a few minutes. Go ahead, David, with your story, then we'll take a question.
Well, anyway, they... It was just the things that I saw that happened when I was in the desert. In the very beginning of my desert, I ran over an IED, and it literally flipped my Humvee through the air.
Oh, no.
And I was alone. The only thing that got really damaged was my hearing. I've lost all my ultrasonics in both ears. I mean, that's a... You've got to be, no, you don't have to be, but I mean, you imagine being inside a vehicle when a device designed to blow up a tank goes off under your car.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
So anyhow, I end up, it's a long story, it takes an hour to tell, but I end up with a Bedouin tribe traveling with them, and they took me to Eilat, which saved my life. But on our travels through there, we got to go by the highway to hell, from the highway from Kuwait back to Baghdad, and we caught the Republican Guard on it, and we unleashed so much firepower. The equivalent of every bomb and bullet ever fired in World War II was released onto that highway.
Oh, my Think goodness. About that. Really? Wow.
So the Bedouins that I was with, we were traveling, and we stopped and looked at this road that was filled with thousands of vehicles that were destroyed. And the reason I'm telling you about it is it's the Bedouins asked me a question, and I said, I don't know what that is. There was a station wagon, and it was completely melted to the ground, stuck to the ground. The only thing left of the driver was just two smoldering boots and two hands on the steering wheel, and the rest of him was a shadow. He was just, the body was absolutely disintegrated. At some incredible temperature, I don't know why, because steering wheels, you ever thought about, you ever seen a car and a crash and it burns? Steering wheels normally survive.
Yeah, right.
This steering wheel was melted into a puddle.
Wow.
And I'm looking at that going, the only thing left was just some burnt, charred hands on the biggest part of the steering wheel. And they asked me what kind of weapon would do that. And honestly, I don't know. But I saw, you know, leftover evidence of weaponry that was released on that highway that I've been in four combat theaters. So I know something about weapons. And, I've never seen anything like that before.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some kind of weapons used in that attack on that highway. And there was this, it had to be enormous power. It had to be something like a particle beam or a plasma beam of that, but the magnitude of it. So that backs up your thought. If they do test a weapon like that, man, right. just a single burst into a forest, and you got a raging forest fire, and there would be no evidence left of accelerator, what started the fire.
Right. Hmm. Wow.
So, don't know. And you can fire from space and do it, and it looked like a lightning flash, and no one would ever know what it was. So, California sure gotten some fire started, and could be arson, you know, they suggest that, but I don't know. If that's true, then you're suggesting the existence of a space-based weapon.
Right, right. Because I've seen the pictures on the internet. I don't know if they're Photoshop, but a lot of people have complained about it. That it does seem to have some credence to it. David, if you don't mind, we can take a call now if you'd like.
Sure.
Okay, Alexa from Seattle. Hi, Alexa. Can you hear us? Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, just fine. Thanks so much for being patient.
Sure, no problem.
You're on the air with David Adair and myself, so thanks.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if you might be able to clarify something about the discussion that was actually occurring a little bit ago regarding to the reptilian community, and if you could clarify what that is just a little bit, because my understanding, I guess I'm just confused about that versus, you know, this whole Avatar, which is supposedly a benevolent group of what could be reptiles. So is there a difference, or?
Well, this gets into a subject that's out of this world, and I'll try to make it brief, and I don't want to take up the rest of David's time talking about it. It's,
sure. Okay. But, I just thought maybe it would be easy to clarify, but I guess not. That's
no, fine. I'll just give you a quick answer since you asked. Sure. I know that from my galactic friends in galactic history, the reptiles, the reptilians, were once a benevolent race, but they were taken over by a white-winged cousins from a parallel universe. Now, this sounds like science fiction, but this is what I've been told, that they came in from a parallel universe and infected them with artificial intelligence. And that the AI eventually separated the reptilians from the source, from God, the supreme being. They became service to self rather than service to others. And so as a result of that, most of the reptiles who visit this planet are self-service, service to self, tyrannical. They're not very nice entities. There are some benevolent reptilians that I, but they usually don't visit this planet. But that's all I know. It's they're a species I like to stay away from. I know enough to keep away from them, and I keep my distance. Eventually, I think they will be transformed back to what they were before a benevolent species, and I'm looking forward to that day. So,
yeah.
Okay. Any questions for David? That's you're on the air.
Well, not that it really come to mind. I thought maybe if he had any input on this one, but it sounds like it's its own topic. And it's fine. But I'm really enjoying the show. I don't usually call in, but I thought I might just for clarification purposes. But this is really good.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, you could always ask David how his extraterrestrial machine works, and ask him to limit his comment to 25 words or less. I'm sure he could do that.
Sure. Yes. Can you answer that question? That would be great.
No. Sorry, David. Don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's pretty funny.
No.
I wish I could answer that quick. But to answer the question of how my engine works, it's really simple. It's a magnetic field. Think of it as a magnetic bottle. And inside the bottle, I can contain the fury of a hydrogen nuclear chain reaction.
Wow.
An H-bomb detonated. And I can contain that inside this magnetic bottle. And then you can tap on it at will and drain the energy out of it and use it to whatever you want to use it for. So imagine an engine that has the power of a sun sitting inside it. And in very simple terms, that's what electromagnetic fusion containment is.
Hmm.
And it's not unknown to Mother Nature. It's been going on for billions of years.
Wow.
You know, what force could contain a nuclear detonation, an H-bomb? It does it all the time out in space. What is a sun? A sun is hundreds of millions of H-bombs going off continuously, simultaneously across the entire mass of a sun. So all of a sudden, we see something shows up next to the sun, and you can't really see it. You just see it's a hole there. It's a black hole. And that's what it is. It's a black hole. It swallows the sun, and the sun disappears forever, taking all those millions of hydrogen chain reaction explosions with it. So obviously, a black hole has no problem containing that kind of force because it does it all the time out there. So all I've done, simply put, is I've been able to figure out mathematically how to construct an artificial black hole. And unlike wormholes, which are unpredictable, and they jump from here to there, and they don't sustain constantly. I'm just the opposite. I'm solid and stable and don't move, so my containment fields stay there, and we have the ability to swallow an entire sun and then contain it. And that's simply put how it works.
David, you know, you would be a fantastic college professor because I was just joking about 25 words or less, but you went a little over, but you still managed to explain it in a very short time.
Yeah, I tell you, I'm more surprised than the rest of you.
Yeah, that would be a fascinating topic.
By the way, you do have some friends on the other side. Albert Einstein just came in, and he really likes your work, by the way.
So. You know, I have a full-size, life-size cardboard stand-up of him nailed to the door of my lab. And every morning when I open up the door, that's the first thing I see.
Oh, how
and
funny.
I always say, "Hey, Albert, how you doing?" And it's a full-size cutout. And it was given to me as a gift. And as a matter of fact, the daughter of the colonel in the Air Force in my story, my colonel, who's my project manager,
right?
I got the cutout from his daughter, Jan Williams. So
that's amazing. That's kind of cool. Well, he knows you, and he's there with you. And he's also brought, I hope you don't mind, he has other friends with him too. Leonardo da Vinci's there, and they give you inspiration and help. And Nikola Tesla too is with you, as well as President Kennedy. They're all very, very proud of you, David.
I have one question for Nikolai, though.
Yeah.
Ask him if he still got his guns. He always carried twin pearl handle 45s. Did you know that?
No, I didn't, but he just gave me
Did you know he killed a man with them?
Really? My goodness.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, people don't seem to find that when they look it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was clearly self-defense, but he's a rootin' tootin' cowboy.
I'll be doggone.
Tesla is, and
Well, he's got some spiritual guns on the other side. He's showing me now.
I bet he does.
Yeah, they do.
He was a smart man. They just didn't pay much attention to him, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Alexa, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. We're getting a call from Thomas in London, England. Thomas, hi, welcome to Out of This World Radio. I'm so glad you could call in. Hello, Thomas. Are you there?
Hello.
Oh, yes. Hi, Thomas. Thank you so much for calling in.
You're most welcome, Ted. I was calling because there was a little conversation there about the possibility of the forest fires in California and elsewhere being caused by weapons, satellite-based or otherwise.
Right.
I just wanted to bring to the attention of the listeners that there are other things being done and have been being done for the last at least 25 or even more years over the planet, particularly Europe and the U.S., and that is a phenomenon that has been called by scientists spontaneous combustion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when you would have an individual who would be, for example, seated in a comfortable leather chair either watching the TV or reading a newspaper, and for no apparent reason whatsoever, that person would be literally incinerated. They would completely catch on fire, but only that person. The chair would not be touched.
Wow.
Yeah.
And scientists have called this for the last probably 35 years spontaneous combustion. So I just wanted to add that little cherry to the cake.
Oh, how interesting, Thomas. David, this is Thomas from England. We'd love your comment on that.
Okay. Hi, Thomas. I've done some research on spontaneous combustion, and mainstream science kind of dismisses it along with crop circles. But I think there's something to it because it's got such a historical record. And it's been around for quite a while, but not until recently in modern science have we paid much attention to the cases of it. But the man's right. When the person burns, they're burning with such an intensity that the body's consumed, and yet the chair they'd be sitting in didn't even catch fire.
Wow, amazing.
Which, boy, I tell you what, sounds like a phaser weapon, doesn't it? So I don't know. That's an excellent suggestion he brings up about there could be a product of a weapon system that we don't know about.
Right.
And as always in science, I always keep an open mind. A lot of colleagues can't do that. They stay so limited within the Newtonian frameworks. The Newtonian physics that we live under, they kind of put blinders like a horse on themselves, and they can't see the peripheral stuff that may be where the answers are. And boy, if anything I've learned through science, it's the Occam razor principle, where the simplest answer is the correct answer, even though it doesn't fit any popular mainstream ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So, and boy, I've seen that thing come by and there are universal forces. For instance, Murphy's Law, it exists out there with UFOs and all these aliens and stuff. They got their own Murphy Law to deal with. They've got other natural laws like that. I'm sure they even have karma they have to deal with. So there's other laws that are transcending that makes it to these other cultures.
Fascinating.
So, could I just add one more little bit?
Sure, Thomas, go ahead.
There's an ex-chief medical officer of Finland that you both may know of, whose name is Rauni Kilde, who was taken out of action in February 2015 because of her revelations, which are still all over the place. If you want to have a little look, you'll find them. Rauni is spelled R-A-U-N-I and Kilde, K-I-L-D-E. One of the things, among many, that she discloses is the sophistication of mind control and mind weapons on the masses. And I just wanted to add that second cherry to the debate, because not only are things being, you know, fried, be they human bodies or forests, but you've also got a lot of distant controlling that can be very easily done, either through another human being or through a machine or through, and this they're extremely good at, satellites. Mm. So just wanted to add that for the sweet dreams of the listeners.
Well, thanks for sharing that. There's been persistent rumors. For example, there was the MKUltra program that's still in existence, apparently, done by the U.S. government, where they basically direct people to act in a certain way as assassins and all kinds of things.
Well, that's exactly what happens. That's why you have these random people who all of a sudden they literally go into their minds,
right,
and take over,
right.
And you know, I mean, the clearest example this Rauni you mentioned is the Iraqi generals who just gave up during Desert
right.
Storm 2.
That's true.
You know. And I was convinced that they were all just bought off with bank mm-hmm. accounts, bulging bank accounts somewhere in Switzerland. And that's not what happened. Their minds were just taken over. So it is good for listeners to be aware of, you know, just, you know, how far advanced all of this is, you know, because it is there.
But I was fortunate enough to visit David Icke at his home at the Isle of Wight in England in May. We mm-hmm. had a long discussion about mind control, and mm-hmm. Simon Parks and I have talked about as well. There's another friend of mine. I think it's time for me to bring him on one of these days soon. He talks about mind control as well, so it'll be interesting. David, do you know much about that area? I don't, beyond what I've been told by my other friend.
Not really. I haven't had too much experience with it. Except when you mentioned David Icke, I've known David Icke, my God, before he started speaking.
Really? Wow. Wonderful.
I met him on his first talk he ever gave.
Uh-huh.
And we haven't always seen eye to eye because of my background and stuff he asserts. But it's been interesting to watch his career go through the paces that it has.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, there's he was concerned about my ideas of tracking people. I'm one of the principals that was involved in a group where you take a very bad criminal and you can shoot this capsule in his arm. And we can track him wherever he's at within 12 inches. I then had to work with some other groups because that brought attention to the National Missing Persons Bureau. Do you know how many people go missing every year in this country? Around 50 to 52,000.
Really? That many? My goodness.
That many. Every 12 months, gone. And it's not just this country. It's all countries around the world. So there are millions of people just gone. And we can track we backtrack a lot of them, and a lot of it is family members kidnapping family members and that kind of stuff. And
right.
But once you get all accounted for, you still got tens of thousands of people gone without a trace.
Yeah.
And I suggested, you know, you could put a device like that somewhere in the body of your child. And a child disappears like that. And the system that we had set in place, I could find where that person is anywhere on the planet within a 2-foot radius. But also, I could off-world track it for about 26,000 miles. And wouldn't it be interesting? All of a sudden, we start putting these in children, and all of a sudden, you've got 26,000-mile barriers being broke all the time by the devices being left. Of course, they'd probably deactivate it. Anyway, David thought I was trying to tag all the humans to control the world, and that's not the case at all. What I was trying to do is I'd like to know where all these tens of thousands of poor people are disappearing to.
I can answer a little bit of that. This is from what I know. My galactic friends tell me, David, but back in March of 1954, President Eisenhower signed an agreement with the reptilians called the Treaty of Merida. And I don't know why it's called Merida, but that's what it was called. And it was an agreement that in exchange for some technology from the reptilians to fight the then Soviet Union, the reptilians would be and their allies would be allowed to abduct and study what they say study humans. And since that time, my galactic friends tell me that about 6 million people have been abducted off the planet. Only of that amount, of only 1.5 million have been returned. The rest have either been, I don't want to offend anybody, but the reptilians do look at humans as a food source, so they've been eaten or put into slavery. And so, but I'm also told by the same breath, I don't want to get people to get depressed about that, because the practice has now been stopped by the Galactic Alliance. So if it has been stopped, and it's been stopped now for the last couple of years, so the reptilians can't do this anymore, where do these people go? I don't know. That's a good question. I know that there's portals on the planet here, David, time portals and also dimensional shift portals where people, if they step into something, they shift and end up in 1855, or perhaps they end up on another planet. But that's a good question. I don't know where they go.
Time portals. They're actually a reality. They're totally uncontrollable by us.
Mm-hmm.
But time portals could float through space. You know, the planet, since we've been talking, this planet has, we've been talking for an hour, over an hour. We've moved more than 100,000 miles through space since we've been talking.
My goodness. Think of that.
And that's an absolute fact. That's a factoid.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like a spacecraft. We're like a spacecraft, and we're flying through space. So you could pass through one of these many wormholes or time portals,
mm-hmm.
And that's how you encounter them. There was the best one that I've ever ran into was, I can't remember the woman's name, and she was a young black lady,
mm-hmm.
and she was a single mom. She had a little daughter. And I think it was Chicago they were in. Anyway, her and her daughter was at home. And let's see. No, she's in Canada. That was it. And she saw a bright white light just appear in her living room. Her daughter being really small, like only 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Bright, shiny. She runs toward it. The mother tries to grab her. The child runs in and is gone, and the mother goes with her.
Oh, my goodness.
And what happens is they step out into a dorm room in Chicago.
Hmm.
And there's a young guy sitting at a desk doing his homework and turns around. There's this mother in a nightgown with her daughter.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Wow.
And so she can't get home. The light disappears. The portal moves on. Which, if that's what is the case, she's so damn incredibly lucky that she didn't materialize in a building.
Oh, yeah.
Or 1,000 years forward or back in time. God knows what a risk she took.
We've got about a minute and a half left. But what if she did?
Okay.
What if she materialized during World War II or during the Civil War? A lot of places.
We took it seriously because the FBI checked her out,
mm-hmm.
and we're trying to find where she flew on a plane, drove a car, drove a bus.
Right.
How did she physically get there? Nothing. No records, nothing.
Right, right.
And you go back to her house today, the house is gone. It's just a slab. The government removed it.
I'll be doggone.
So, and this is not just hearsay. This is mainstream science I'm quoting.
Oh, yeah. So oh, yeah.
We have a, you know, a case, but we don't have any answers for it. It's just we call it a phenomenon or anomaly.
I had a situation about a year and a half ago, David. I don't have much time left, but I'll tell you quickly, where I had a blue bag full of thumb drives for my show, And I was bringing my suitcase up to the briefcase up to the studio here, and the blue bag disappeared, just gone. Well, 3 weeks later, I was kind of upset because I didn't have backups. And 3 weeks later, I'm bringing the same briefcase up to the studio, and suddenly the blue bag reappears. And my only explanation is that somehow it flipped into another dimension and there's a time portal around the studio. I'll have to tell Eric to be careful walking around. I wouldn't want anyone here to walk off in another time zone. But we've got about 20 seconds left. Okay.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, it's funny. David, we're running out of time, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on today. I've had such a great time talking to you. And I hope you have a wonderful and happy day, everyone, and I hope your days are out of this world. Take care, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. Bye-bye.